I'm Marty Moscoe, and welcome to Radio Times. The description of the last hours of Timothy Piazza's life on February 2nd and 3rd is truly horrifying. The Penn State student and Beta Theta Pi pledge was drunk and seriously injured, having fallen down a set of stairs twice. Surveillance video show his fraternity brothers largely ignoring him, even stepping over his body, and finally calling 911 after 12 hours when he was in crisis. He died from his injury. Penn State has banned the fraternity, and a grand jury charged 18 Beta Theta Pi members with involuntary manslaughter, hazing, reckless endangerment, furnishing alcohol to minors, among other charges, saying Piazza's death was the direct result of encouraged reckless conduct. Some of them reportedly tried to cover up what had happened. Jim Piazza, Timothy's father, spoke when the charges were filed last week. We have lightly edited his comments.
This didn't have to happen. This is the result of a feeling of entitlement, flagrant disobedience of the law, and disregard for moral values that was then exacerbated by egregious acts of self-preservation. Again, this did not have to happen. No parent should have to deal with this. We are committed to making meaningful and impactful changes to Greek life, to the extent that there will be ongoing Greek life at Penn State and hopefully throughout the country, in honor of our son, and are committed to doing everything that we can to assure that no other parents will have to go through the pain and grief we are currently experiencing. Again, no parent should have to go through this with everything that I've heard at this point.
Such a sad statement. Let me introduce our two guests. Doug Feerberg is an attorney specializing in school violence, sexual assaults, and hazing-related lawsuits at schools and universities around the country. Doug Feerberg, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning. Can you hear me well enough?
I can hear you well enough. It's a little...
Okay.
We'll hang in there. Let me introduce our other guest, Gentry McCreary, joining us by Skype. He's an affiliated consultant with the NCIRM Group. That's a law firm that specializes in higher education law. Also CEO and managing partner of Dyad Strategies. That's a consulting firm. And he works with fraternities and universities to foster better practices. And Gentry McCreary, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Doug, let me begin with you. This death, of course, terribly tragic. These are very serious charges against these 18 members of this fraternity. Are we at some kind of a turning point, do you think, when it comes to dangerous hazing rituals? I asked that question about 5 years ago when Robert Champion was killed. This was back in 2011. But does this represent, do you think, a turning point?
I would love to be optimistic and say that it does represent a turning point or that things will change from here on in. You know, sadly, though, and my heart goes out to the family, we have seen these types of tragedies in Greek life for decades. And, you know, historically, while we've been making some changes within the industry, there's a tremendous uproar. There's speeches given by presidents of the university, like in this circumstance. And then when the public furor dies down, the Greek community continues to operate in the unsafe manner in which it's been doing for decades.
So you don't feel that. Gentry, let me turn to you. And I do want to describe, I haven't seen the video, but I've read several descriptions of the video. And I should say the video goes on for something like 12 hours. Do you think the fact that there is video evidence that this could change practices at fraternities and other organizations on campus?
Well, certainly, I think video evidence seems to captivate the public more than just a description. I think about the Joe Mixon and Ray Rice domestic abuse incidents, that those were out in the media for months and in some cases years. And then once the video became public, there was an absolute uproar. So I do think video has a way of really describing and helping people see what's really happening. So I do think that may be different in this case. Time will only tell, but I agree with Doug. This is one of several instances we've seen over the last several decades. And will we capitalize on this momentum and actually see real substantive change, both at the fraternal level and at the college and university level. One can only hope, but at this point, time will tell.
Well, let me give a description. And again, I should say I haven't seen the video. I read several descriptions, but it goes on apparently for 12 hours. This is surveillance video at the fraternity. Clearly, Timothy Piazza is drunk. He's fallen downstairs. He's taken by his fraternity brothers. He's put on a couch. Sometimes they slap him. They ignore him. They shake him. They walk over him. He falls down. He falls downstairs again. There's blood on his face. Apparently, he's breathing heavily. He begins to feel kind of cold and gray. He's put back on the couch. And then 12 hours later, there's a call to 911. And let me play that call to 911. And then I want to get to both of your responses.
And what's going on today?
We have a friend who is unconscious. He's hasn't moved. His cold extremity is probably in an ambulance.
Okay, how old is he?
He is 19.
Yeah, 19
years old.
And was he breathing?
He is breathing.
Was there any alcohol or anything involved, do you know?
Yes, there is.
All right, we'll get somebody over there, okay? If anything, just call back and let us know.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
The Gentry, and Doug, we weren't there, so we don't know, but I guess to you, Gentry, what took so long? I mean, 12 hours where he was clearly drunk, but also in some kind of medical distress.
It's really hard to understand what people were doing for 12 hours. The members of the fraternity, the leadership of the fraternity, who we can assume had been trained on how to respond to situations like this by both their national fraternity and the university. Other bystanders who were there were members of a female group who were present in the house that night. Why one person didn't look at what was happening and have the foresight to call 911 earlier, it's beyond me. I really can't answer that question.
Doug, what do you think?
Again, what a tragedy. But this is part and parcel with one of the central problems in the Greek industry across the country that, candidly, Penn State countenances. The entire management model for the Greek system is based on self-management, that they're beyond the management of the departments of housing at universities and things like that. So for virtually every policy, including crisis intervention, they rely on 18- and 19-year-olds who are often extremely intoxicated and trying to either cover up the situation, as we've seen in here, or respond to it in a way that they're really not trained to do. And so we've seen across the country, and we've seen it on videos in the neighboring state, New Jersey, with the death of Caitlin Kovacs, mm-hmm. where young people are in tremendous trouble inside fraternity houses, and there is nobody responsible making solid life and death decisions. And until universities get rid of the self-management model, this premise that underage individuals who are not even legally capable of consuming what they're managing in the house will manage it effectively, we're going to continue to see injury and death like this.
I would add to that, Doug. You know, in this case, we had a responsible adult living in the house. There was a university-employed adult who lived in this facility. Now, according to the video evidence, he never came out and responded. But even in this case, you have a situation in which the situation was ripe for some responsible adult to step in. There was someone living there in the house. But even in this situation, that didn't prevent this tragic death from occurring, which to me demonstrates that you can do some of the right things, and that still doesn't guarantee the safety of the individuals in those facilities, which is really a frightening scenario.
Well, Gentry, my understanding, the manual includes there will be no alcohol abuse, there will be no drinking games, no underage drinking, no paddling. I mean, this is on paper, but if it's not being implemented, what does that tell you?
Well, it tells me that there's a very strong social culture at Penn State. Look, I've done some work with organizations at Penn State. The hazing culture at Penn State is not unique. It's not dissimilar from any of the other large schools that we have and even some small schools. What's unique about Penn State is the alcohol culture. You've got an alcohol culture there where students start drinking on Wednesday night and they don't stop drinking until Sunday afternoon, binge drinking 4 and 5 nights per week. That's a very typical experience for most students. And so you add in this need for hazing, you add in this sense of social dominance that, well, I went through it as a pledge and now I can make you go through this. And you put that into a culture with a really problematic binge drinking issue, it's a recipe for disaster. And so I think Penn State is smart as they've released several statements that they are not just looking at this as a hazing issue, but are addressing it within the realm of the campus alcohol culture, which to me is the more problematic aspect of what happened here.
Doug, is hazing against the law?
Yes, and the vast majority of states. But can I follow up on what,
you
just,
sure can.
What Gentry just said?
Yes.
Because I think he's giving too much credit or discredit to Penn State. Look, on the drinking cultures, one thing has been sure for probably 20 years since Harvard University studied the issue, that the single strongest predictor of binge drinking on college campuses across the country is fraternity membership. That's, in fact, been true for many years. So, you know, when people start looking at and deflecting attention to drinking cultures in general, drinking cultures at a particular university, they're ignoring which is solid research that says this is a problem unique to Greek institutions, unparalleled by the rest of the student population. So unless we focus on that and deal with how is alcohol used, how is it managed, why is there a system that allows alcohol to be used in Greek housing and have 18 and 19-year-olds manage it when they cannot do it at any licensed other establishment in the country. You can't go to a bar or restaurant in the country, certainly not in Pennsylvania, and have 18 and 19-year-olds managing the provision of the alcohol at the bar. They're not entitled to consume it. But yet, wink, wink, nod, nod, Penn State and other universities, you know, believe that this is a responsible way of doing it. And, you know, folks, I'm not saying this is Gentry, but folks in that side of the industry walk in and say, here, we're going to explain to you how to give wristbands. We're going to explain to you how to serve salty snacks. We're going to explain how to do all these sorts of things. And when you have people in your fraternity house pass out because you've not checked their IDs, because you've not monitored how much they're consuming, because maybe you're forcing them to consume alcohol, when they're lying on the floor and need emergency medical attention, here's now what you should do.
You know what? Gentry, hold on 1 second, only because we have to take a very short break, and I know you want to respond to what Doug just said. Let me just quickly reintroduce the two of you, talking with Doug Feerberg and Gentry McCreary. We are talking about the death of 19-year-old Timothy Piazza. He was a pledge at Penn State's fraternity, Beta Theta Pi. He died in February, and now a grand jury has issued indictments. We want to hear from you. Have you ever been hazed or been the hazer? What to do about dangerous hazing rituals at colleges and universities? Who's in charge? Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. Just a recap here, 18 members of Beta Theta Pi fraternity at Penn State University face criminal charges in the hazing-related death of 19-year-old Timothy Piazza. This event is the latest in what has been a national problem. We are talking about what transpired at this fraternity, also discussing why dangerous, violent, and toxic Greek rituals persist. Our guests are attorney Doug Feerberg, who specializes in hazing-related lawsuits. Also, Gentry McCreary, he's a consultant who works with fraternities and universities to foster better fraternity practices. And you can call or text our comment line, 267-405-2006. Gentry, let me give you a chance to respond to what Doug was saying before the break. And I guess part of the question is, who is responsible? Is it the university? Is it the actual fraternity? Is it the Greek system that's responsible for what happens inside a fraternity?
Yeah, there's lots of blame to go around. I agree with Doug in that the residential model for our fraternity and to a lesser extent our sorority houses is a huge culprit behind these issues. He's right. In no other place does underage drinking happen with such ease and with such lack of regulation. What I would challenge Doug on is that to say that this is unique to the fraternity system, while certainly it's more prevalent, it is certainly not unique. When I read the account of what happened with Timothy Piazza, I was immediately reminded of a case that I dealt recently with a college football team. A very similar set of circumstances. A student ended up severely injured. Luckily, was not killed. I also thought of a situation involving a women's soccer team, again, where students were hospitalized for alcohol consumption in very similar type situations. So to suggest that this is somehow uniquely of college fraternity problem is a blatant misuse of the facts that are out there and available. Certainly it's more prevalent, but anytime you have a residential social component, when you have groups of college students who are living together in off-campus houses, who are hosting social events in those houses as part of some sort of team or club or organization or absolutely fraternity and sorority, we're going to see this sort of behavior. So to just say, put this all on the fraternities is frankly disingenuous, because we know it's a much bigger problem than that.
Well, Doug, I'm going to give you a chance to respond, but how much do you think, I mean, what I heard from Gentry's description is alcohol, alcohol, alcohol. How much is that the problem?
All right, let's start off with understanding what is, in fact, the reality. Yes, alcohol is an issue. It's undeniable. It is what it is. But the phenomenon present and unique to the Greek system is not just the alcohol abuse, which it dominates in that area, and that research shows that, is that you have circumstances like this take place. You can go do whatever research you want, and you will not find but maybe a case or two where the alcohol consumption is so drastic and then the actions afterwards are so irresponsible. Think about it. You have at times binge drinking in dormitories. Do you have young people lying in the common areas and hallways of university dormitories for 11 hours without being attended to? Never happens. Do you have in other places on universities, do you have students lying in public view for 11 hours in need of help and no one's getting them help? It doesn't happen. It only happens in the Greek systems because behind their closed doors, universities and responsible people are prevented from going in. That's a system of self-management that has existed for decades. And every year, at least since 1970, the Greek industry has had a student die in these circumstances. And so were I to go back, and, you know, this is in part where I disagree with Gentry, because one of the problems with the fraternity industry and Penn State is that they will not open the books and tell everybody about how many people have been hurt from hazing or killed from hazing or killed from binge drinking at the universities. But if you look at the anecdotal information, you could go back very easily and identify year in, year out, specific individuals dying in fraternity houses, not only from the original wrongdoing of the alcohol abuse, but the failure to act responsibly when the young person could have been saved. And so when Mr. Piazza says, in an absolutely sad, traumatic way, that this could have been prevented and should have been prevented, he's absolutely right. There was 11 hours to make up for it.
And
no one stepped up to the plate. And so people like Gentry and everybody, that, you know, there's this education on bystanders and what everybody else should do to be responsible. And it's often just drawing the attention away from one of the central problems in this issue, which is the way universities and Greeks allow themselves to be managed or mismanaged, as the case may be.
And I want to pick up on things that you both said, but I also want to play a clip. And this is Cordell Davis. He's a Beta Theta Pi fraternity brother, and he appeared on Good Morning America talking with Robin Roberts. Let's give it a listen.
I said, he needs to be at the hospital right now. I said, we should call 911, get him in an ambulance. And I'm screaming. I'm very, like, I'm being very obvious with my thoughts, and, you know, I was kind of like, shut up. I got thrown against the wall. And I didn't know what to do after that. I felt kind of useless, and I felt like I had no say in the situation after that.
You didn't feel like you could leave and call somewhere else, go outside or do anything? You didn't think
that was... I was told that I was overreacting, that I was crazy. I said, well, if he fell down the stairs, maybe he has a concussion, maybe worse, and we can't let him fall asleep. And they're saying, oh, that's a myth. So I'm questioning myself. I'm saying, do I really know what I'm talking about? Like, what do I actually know? As when everyone is telling me that I'm wrong, it was just hard to, like, think.
Gentry, here was a bystander. Here was a concerned fraternity brother. He wanted to do something to help Timothy Piazza and was, in essentially, either talked out of it or prevented from doing it. Now, clearly, Robin Roberts says you could have left and done something about it. But what does that tell us about fraternity life?
Well, anytime you think about these situations, the question that always comes up is, you know, is the old analogy of the apples or the barrel. Are we talking about bad apples? Are we talking about a bad barrel? Certainly, based on what I've read and heard and what is being alleged, certainly in this case, it appears that we're dealing with both. There's the structural inherent issues that Doug has referenced, and he and I don't disagree on that. The residential model, keeping administrators out, keeping police out, everything being done in private, that's problematic. We've got to have a serious and honest conversation about Greek housing and the inherent problems culturally and environmentally that presents. So Doug and I don't disagree on that. But certainly in this case, we need to talk about these individuals. We need to talk about the morals of the people who made the decision not to call the police, to circle the wagons and try and protect the fraternity at what eventually cost the life of one of their members. So we need to have an honest discussion about the barrel, absolutely. But I think we can look at what happened and say, gosh, what were these kids thinking? Why would they think that it's okay to do this sort of thing and to not call and to discourage this young man who seemed to want to call from being able to do that?
Well, let me quote something. This was in the Philadelphia Inquirer today. James Vivenzio was pledging, I believe, at Kappa Delta Rho. This was a couple of years ago. He has sued Penn State. They're pushing back on his suit, but I'm just going to describe what happened to him in 2012. He was force-fed buckets of liquor mixed with urine, vomit, and hot sauce, made to guzzle hard alcohol until he vomited. He was burned on the chest with a cigarette. He was beaten by a fraternity member after he failed to participate in rituals. We hear rituals about people running the gauntlet, about guns being put to people's heads. I'm going to put this to you, Doug, but Gentry, I want to give you to let you weigh in on that. Again, if this were happening outside a fraternity, how would we deal with that?
It doesn't happen outside of a fraternity. Okay? Period. We don't have to deal with it. And that gets back to the supervision question and where these things take place. So, look, I want to talk about a couple things relating to this barrel question and what we should be looking at. So let's look at the barrel. Penn State came out immediately and said, look, you know, how could this be with Beta Theta Pi? We wouldn't know that Beta Theta Pi was a bad actor. Is anybody even aware of whether or not Beta Theta Pi has been sued for traumatic injury or death cases in other states? None of your listeners are, and maybe Gentry is, and maybe you are. You know, I've sued Beta Theta Pi over similar alcohol issue tragedies that resulted in sexual assault of women in fraternity house. Again, it's because of this particular structure. If we look at the barrel even larger and say, well, what is this about Penn State? You know, it's not, this is, you know, Vivenzio, I understand that you're talking about, but look, I represent the family of Marquise Bram, who committed suicide as a result of being hazed at a university fraternity in horrific circumstances, what they did to these young people. And in addition to what the fraternity misconduct was, you know, Marquise Bram, the RAs and the employees of Penn State knew it was taking place and didn't intervene and stop it. and knew shortly before he committed suicide because of the hazing that he was in psychological crisis, and told the dean of student affairs, or could have been the assistant dean of student affairs, and no one intervened to stop the hazing or protect the life of this young man.
Doug, hold on hold on one second. Let me give Gentry a chance to respond. But also, I know you do work with fraternities, universities, to foster better practices. I'm assuming coming up with more benign forms of ritual and perhaps even hazing. What is a substitute for what we've been talking about?
Well, as a researcher, one of the things that I've been very interested in and am currently working on a manuscript related to the motivational mechanisms of hazing. Oftentimes, hazing is done with an altruistic motivation, right? They're trying to build a sense of community or a sense of unity, or they're trying to teach lessons. But some of the things that you described, and certainly what is alleged to have occurred at Penn State, is what we would refer to as, excuse me, hazing that's done with a social dominance motivation. In other words, the hazing doesn't serve any point or purpose other than I'm reinforcing the group culture and the hierarchy in the group. I'm older than you. I've got what you want, and I can make you do anything. I can make you drink buckets of liquor mixed with urine. I can brand you. I can put out a cigarette on your chest, not because it builds you into a better brother or because it makes our fraternity stronger, but because I went through those things, and therefore I now have the right to make you do those things. And that particular brand of hazing, that hazing that's done with no point or purpose, it's only done to reinforce the social hierarchy in the groups, that's the stuff that needs to be rooted out much, much earlier. And this is what I train colleges and universities to do, is to recognize that type of hazing before it manifests itself in such dangerous and problematic ways. Universities tend to only address hazing based on its perceived severity. They've got this 1 to 10 scale, and if it's a really serious, you know, level 9, level 10 issue, well, they'll immediately step in and address it. But if it's lower level, level 3, level 4, they tend to say, well, you know, boys will be boys, and let's not address it. But even those level 4 or level 5 lower level type hazing cases, if they're done with that social dominance motivation, we see the path that group, that fraternity is on. And if they're doing that, if they've convinced themselves that they can do things to students just because they're freshmen and just because they went through it, those are fraternities that need to be much more strongly disciplined much earlier in the process. And I think that would prevent more of the high level type, the Timothy Piazza type incidents, from occurring. So part of what I try to do is to teach colleges and universities how to address and recognize that earlier before it's too late.
Let me read an email from Julia. She says, I wonder if alumni advisors will be charged. This is not likely to be an isolated case, and alumni advisors are likely to be complicit in allowing or even encouraging the culture that made the current situation possible. I can't speak to whether that's true or not, but Doug, do alumni play a role in this? Do they come back to fraternities and get involved in pledge and initiating the next group of frat brothers?
Yes, on a regular basis. So even in the death of Marquise Bram, when the individuals, fraternity members, were talking about the lock-in ritual, which locks young people in a closet with a bucket that they mutually vomit in and locks them in there for hours, as we understand, the national chapter president was at that meeting. Let me get back to this point that Gentry makes, which, you know, to me is one of those circumstances where we can be so smart, we're maybe even stupid, okay? This whole structure that says that these groups that are recognized by universities and then given great benefits and value from universities will have 8-week pledge periods and all this hullabaloo, so that they can learn the deep, dark secrets of what are essentially college male groups with alumni connections, it is itself patently ridiculous. If you think about and dangerous, if you think about the lifelong relationships and social groups and things that people join as adults to become responsible members of the community, you join your church. They don't haze you. You don't go through an 8-week initiation period where you learn the history of everybody that founded the church and built the temple and had the keys to the Holy Grail. I mean, we're not talking about you know, something other than, you know, where maybe in initiations you go through the military, where in that circumstance you're being taught and trained by responsible people as to what it means to be a soldier. We're talking about student groups. And when you look at these circumstances and say Penn State says there's a rush period and then there's 8 weeks where they learn the Holy Grail and they do all sorts of things, it's ludicrous. When Sigma Alpha Epsilon, which is one of the largest national fraternities, was involved year in and year out or over a period of many years of having many tragedies, including involving the death of two of my clients, they finally came to the conclusion that this entire idea of pledging, forget the psychology of it, whatever the psychology is, it's fundamentally flawed and doesn't need to exist for our college students to try to decide, do they want to be involved with a group and live in a particular house and develop good social contacts and things like that? It's just absolutely unnecessary.
Well, Doug, we're almost up in a break here. I know Gentry wants to respond. You're saying get rid of the whole pledge thing, that if you want to be part of fraternity, then you have an interview and you're either accepted or not. Is that what you're saying?
You're accepted or you're not. Yeah. You know, do I have to show you that I can do back handsprings in order to be an accepted member of your vaulted, you know, lauded group that goes all the way back to Thomas Jefferson? No, I don't have to do that.
Well, hold on to that thought. And, Gentry, I'm going to do this to you again, but I'll give you a chance after this very short break. Talking with Doug Feerberg and also Gentry McCreary about several things, including hazing at fraternities. We've been talking about the death of 19-year-old Timothy Piazza, 18 members of the Beta Theta Pi fraternity at Penn State University faced criminal charges in the hazing-related death of this young man. His death was caught on video, and it shows fraternity brothers essentially ignoring the unconscious student who had consumed a fatal amount of alcohol. He died shortly after 911 was called and he was taken to a hospital. We want to hear from you. Have you been hazed? Have you been a hazer? What to do about dangerous hazing rituals at colleges and universities? Call or text our comment line, 267-405-2006. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen, talking with Doug Feerberg. He's an attorney who specializes in school violence, sexual assaults, and hazing-related lawsuits at schools and universities around the country. Also with us, Gentry McCreary. He's an affiliated consultant with the NCIRM law firm, specializing in higher education law, also CEO and managing partner of Dyad Strategies, a consulting firm working with fraternities and universities to foster better practices. And we've been talking about the hazing death of a Penn State student. You can send us a comment at radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Gentry, just a quick response, if you don't mind, only because a lot of people want to join our conversation. And Doug was saying before the break, just get rid of pledge and just, you know, have fraternities decide who's going to be a brother and who's not.
Yeah, Doug and I don't disagree on this. And in fact, my own fraternity, Alpha Gamma Rho, made the decision about 25 years before Sigma Alpha Epsilon did. What SAE will find, as other fraternities have found, is that while they will still deal with hazing, they will deal most likely with less severe forms of hazing, because by eliminating that pledge period and immediately initiating those members, what they're doing is eliminating the power differential, or at least significantly reducing the power differential. And this is why I think you tend to see hazing be much more severe in fraternities than in other organizations. We know that hazing occurs in military groups, even on college campuses and ROTC units, in sports teams and sports clubs, performing arts groups. It happens in a lot of different places. Why is it so much more severe in fraternities and to a lesser extent sororities? Part of it is because of the residential culture that Doug has already pointed out, but part of it is because of this power differential, and that with a football team, at the end of the day, the coach is in charge. There's a responsible adult who has real decision-making power, so the sophomore who's hazing the freshman doesn't have any real power over him. If we eliminate that power differential, we'll still see hazing, but it will be much likely less severe hazing, and hazing that's probably much less likely to result in serious injury or death. So Doug and I definitely don't disagree on that.
In fact, you both have mentioned the military, and we have an email from Peter. I'll just summarize here about his son going through Marine Corps training, and we know boot camp is really tough, but what he says is a service above self. True bonding comes from helping your buddies, and clearly there was none of that, talking about Penn State. But he also says, I can assure you that when my son went through Marine Corps training, there was not a drop of alcohol. So just kind of underscoring what both of you have said. Also, a tweet from Rick. He says, I partied my whole life. This stuff only happens in frat houses. They aren't educated on the limits with alcohol. And let me play Chuck, who called our comment line, and let's hear what he has to say.
Chuck from South Jersey. My daughter attends the College of New Jersey, which is not known for being a big binge drinking school. But I can tell you from her personal experiences that the university is definitely complicit in the activities that happen at the fraternity houses off campus. They turn a blind eye to it. The kids have to pay the consequences when they get caught by the police. But the school's definitely turning a blind eye, and I can tell you it's probably typical of any other school anywhere in the country.
I can't obviously speak to the College of New Jersey, but Doug, and to you, Gentry, as well. So who is responsible? Let's say we're talking about a fraternity or a sorority. Is it the university? Is it the actual sorority fraternity? Is it their organizing? Is it the overarching organization that's responsible? How do you see this, Doug?
Well, let's start off. That's a big question, and so, you know, even like as a lawyer, as I hear the word responsibility,
right,
you know, it breaks out into what's the moral responsibility, what's the legal responsibility. But let's start off with this. Let's assume that this is just a, you know, not just a, but is on some level a public health issue, a public problem. It is. It goes across the country. You would like to believe that everybody trying to address the problem and assess who's responsible and find the solutions would all be operating from the same information that would identify the source of the problem, the numbers, the cause, and all that sort of stuff. So now let's take a look at the universities such as Penn State. Penn State does not publicly report. It's a state institution. Does not publicly identify anywhere on its web-based or other forms of communication the number of incidents and injuries and allegations of alcohol misconduct and people being injured or hurt and killed in fraternities on its campus. Doesn't do that.
Hmm.
Why should that information not be out there so people could understand what sorts of problems are being experienced within the Greek system at Penn State? Instead, and I could ask you this question, is Penn State partially responsible for this problem when, on its web-based communications, it makes the following statement to parents, specifically to parents. For many parents, the fraternity and sorority community reminds them of images of the movie of Animal House. There are many, and this is a key word, myths about the fraternity and sorority community. But the reality is that, and then it goes on.
Right.
Let me say very clearly. Why on God's green earth is Penn State University publicly calling these issues myths? They're not myths, not by any stretch of the imagination. So until universities make a decision to be open, transparent, and honest about the injuries and deaths on their college campuses, if only from the Greek industry operating there, then everybody's talking anecdotes.
Well, let me.
There's not a way of absolutely solving this problem.
Sure, let me put that to Gentry. Doug has said several times during this hour there needs to be more openness and transparency about what happens. We've been talking about Penn State, but obviously colleges, universities across the country with their Greek system. Do we need more openness and transparency?
Well, we do, and I'm a fan of what the state of South Carolina did in the wake of the Tucker Hips tragedy, which was to pass a state law requiring universities to publish all of this data, any fraternity-related injury or death, list of any organizations that have been And not just fraternities or sororities, any college campus organization that has been sanctioned for any reason. A lot of this could be easily addressed through some small tweaks to the federal reporting requirements under the Clery Act. We could require colleges and universities to report all hazing-related issues. Right now, hazing is not a mandated crime to report under the Clery bill. We could also mandate that any incident that occurs in a fraternity house, whether on or off campus, be included in those crime statistics. Those would be easy changes that would open up for a lot of transparency. I've advocated for those changes before. Up until now, they've fallen on deaf ears. So I think there's certainly some room for some changes to federal laws that would make transparency not only a little easier, but would frankly make it a requirement for colleges and universities.
We got a lot of comments here. Let me read a text from a listener who says, "It sounds to me that people are being overly dramatic. This was a perfect storm and a huge tragedy. I cannot believe that the people in that house wanted the young man to die. Is it more likely that they were also drunk and making stupid decisions?" Doug, what's your response to that?
You know, there's truth in that.
Right?
I mean, I don't think we're over-dramatizing the death of someone. And I in so many of the circumstances, you know, have seen that the young people didn't go into the event seeking to seriously or traumatically hurt or kill somebody. You know, it is true. What is perceived as fun and games and ritual and all that sort of stuff, at the outset, though, may go wrong. And does go wrong. And then the question is, what are the individuals doing when there's a breach? Are they stepping into it and resolving it? Or are they walking away or making excuses for why they couldn't? So, you know, we've seen that time and again. What I would say is, whether or not we're making a big deal about this, is that, again, if we go back and look, and the general public does not know this, because this is in part what's not ever being communicated by the Penn States or the fraternity industry themselves, with or without the need to compel them through legislation, but to have them act responsibly to advise adults of the risks they face on campus, is that in the 1980s, the fraternity industry was ranked as the sixth worst insurance risk in this country. Huh? And number seven was asbestos contractors. Okay? So
okay.
You don't get that status without, unfortunately, having many circumstances like this, just that people didn't find out about them. And so, yes, perhaps we are dramatizing something that has percolated to the public consciousness, but that doesn't mean, you know, there's more of the iceberg below the surface.
Let me read some more comments. A tweet from ATP. "Those of us living in college towns know it's not unusual to see drunken students wandering around or collapsed in the street." An email from Gene. "Will these frats be banned from the university?" Well, this one is at least for now. An email from Doug. He says, "Hazing is not needed for bonding. I always said I would not pay to have people beat me up just to be their friend. I'm a member of Delta Upsilon, a non-secret, non-hazing fraternity at the University of South Carolina. No hazing. Anyone could attend the initiation. We still had great times. A group of young guys still are some of my best friends." A text from a listener, a member of a national sorority that was not permitted, according to our charter, to have alcohol or social events. "I learned two things. Our social events were very boring without the occasional sober Jello wrestling, and our members were always home safe at night." So, I mean, I guess, Gentry, and to you, Doug, as well, I mean, one would be to ban fraternities, one would be to ban hazing, one would be to ban alcohol, perhaps drugs play a role as well. Gentry, where do we go from here?
Well, a lot of those things are are already banned. Hazing is against the law. Underage consumption of alcohol is against the law. I'm glad that we heard from a member of Delta Upsilon. I think they're a great example of an organization that's really trying to be progressive, that's really trying to research the experience of their members and really trying to do a great job preventing these sorts of things from happening. You've got a lot of organizations that really are invested in doing it the right way. At the end of the day, we've got to help students come up with better ways to create these meaningful rites of passage that they want. I've had students come to me and say, you know what, Gentry, I want to be hazed. I want to have this experience. And I don't think that's true. I think what students really want is a meaningful rite of passage. They want meaningful connection. They want an opportunity to really bond with a group of people in a way that gives them a feeling of accomplishment. And how we have failed students is by all we've done is given them a list of thou shalt nots. We've told them all the things that they're not allowed to do. We've done a horrible job helping them come up with good ways to build that sense of brotherhood, to build that sense of commitment, and to feel a sense of accomplishment in a way that doesn't result in serious injury or death. And so that's a lot of the work that I do, is to try to help fraternities come up with ways to do this in a way that isn't dangerous, that isn't going to lead to dangerous alcohol consumption, to physical abuse, to some of the activities that we've seen result in injury or death all over the country.
Doug, I want to play a caller to the show, and I'll give you a chance to respond. This is Rachel.
Hi, my name is Rachel. I'm from Elkins Park. I am the mom of two sons who are in fraternities, and that alone is very unusual for me because I was raised in a household that wanted nothing to do with Greek life and, in fact, left Penn State after a year because I was so disgusted by what Greek life and the social life looked like up there. So there was a study that Penn State had before we were aware of this young man's death, and I was pretty stunned that they hadn't done anything to make a change when they saw clearly statistics that could have led them to believe such a tragedy like this would happen. I haven't heard you mention the financial piece of all of this, meaning the fact that people who had a good fraternity life at school often give a lot of money to the school. Therefore, perhaps schools aren't listening the way they should be, because they're risking losing money.
Doug, do you think money plays a role in this?
I completely respect what that caller said. Take a look at... can I take 30 seconds for this answer?
You can.
Okay. One of the strongest... Listen, I went to the University of Michigan, and I didn't join a fraternity. So I'm always faced with the issue of, if I'm going to go back to the university to visit it for homecoming or something else, where do I go? You know, I lived in 7 apartments when I was there, like your average person who doesn't join a fraternity. Fraternities provide a base connection between alumni and universities, and, you know, their internal studies absolutely demonstrate that those alumni are better, you know, givers after graduation to the fraternity, after graduation from the college. They give more of their time. They give more of their money. They are connected to the university. No doubt that is why Penn State says on its website that 17% of its student body is Greek. Well, 17% of that student body now has a house, a forever home on Penn State's campus when they graduate. So when they want to come back and see their friends and have a place to go and connect back up to the university, they go back to their home.
And Doug,
that is an absolute real consideration, because at times when we have tried to force universities to change, we know on the whispering in the other ear, you know, to keep the system as it is fraternity alumni.
Gentry, I'm giving you the last word, 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, Doug is right. It's the elephant in the room that no one really wants to discuss. When I was at the University of Alabama, we did a study that we had data from our development office that I think between 60 and 70% of all alumni donations came from the 20 to 25% of alumni who were Greek alumni. And so oftentimes universities are having to take a chance of, well, do we get sued by Doug Freiberg, or do we wait and see if something happens, or do we alienate these alumni? And more universities are rolling the dice on getting sued by Doug and supporting these organizations and refusing to stand up to these cultures. And I think we need to see that change. We need to see more universities willing to stand up and do the things required to change these cultures.
Well, I appreciate ending on that note. Gentry McCreary, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times. Doug Fairberg, thank you for joining us as well.
You take care.
You too. Good discussion. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Trinae Nuri. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thank you so much for joining us, and we appreciate all those calls and comments.